Shut up and sit down.
Hey, you've reached Coach Lundy with Fourth Down Focus. We're on episode 3 today. I have a very special guest, Coach Garrett McLaughlin from Bates College. I'm going to have him talk to you about some other projects he does that I find very interesting. It's actually how we met. How you doing, Coach?
Doing great, man. Appreciate you having me on.
It's a pleasure, man. The pleasure is all mine. I'd like you to share with our audience. We have a really neat, diverse bunch. You know, we've got parents, of course, of athletes that are aspiring to play at your level, a bunch of high school specialists that have goals, and they want to hear from people like you as far as expectations and what they could and should be doing right now in order to be the most marketable. So before we get into the content, I'd like you to touch on a little bit of your career as a coach. You've been around quite a bit and you've done some great things. I also want to talk to you about your project where I met you. If you could go ahead.
I actually was a guy who didn't play in college. I was fortunate. I got into my dream school, which was Syracuse University. Grew up rooting for the football, basketball program there, all the stuff. Always dreamed about going there. I was a decent high school football player. And I figured, hey, I can go walk on. I've seen Rudy. It works, right? I was not up to snuff to be a walk-on at the Power 5 level there. But they said, hey, you seem passionate. We'll let you be an equipment guy. So started there. Eventually worked my way up into recruiting, video operations, and then was actually a student assistant coach for my last year and a half. Was fortunate after that. To go on to Buffalo State, where I served as a defensive backs coach, University of New Haven, where I was an inside linebackers coach, Wagner College, where I was an outside linebackers coach, and now transitioning to Bates. My first 2 years here, I was a running backs coach as well as special teams coordinator. I just took over, swapped the running backs for the D-line for my third year here. So that's a little bit of my coaching background. And besides that, I also run a Twitter account, Teams Talk. The app for that is Talk_teams. It's a thing where, and kind of brainstorming with my head coach who's been awesome and has pushed me out to do stuff like this, where first of all, in our league at Bates, we don't have spring football. We don't have on the road recruiting. So I was in the mindset of, well, what can I do to kind of, just improve myself as a coach and where can I kind of serve the coaching community as well? You know, I think every other position in football, including specialists, have like little Twitter accounts that serve them. Offense has schematic ones, defense has schematic ones, but for special teams as a whole holistic deal, really didn't have any real social media presence or something where if a coach wanted to learn more about it or if a player wanted to learn about specific techniques and stuff like that could follow. So I just started it just kind of on a lark about a year and a half ago, just about 18 months ago now. And it's been kind of cool to see it grow. And, you know, especially with the quarantine, you know, it's really taken off because I had a bunch of free time. A bunch of other coaches had a bunch of free time, wanted to learn, wanted to get better. So, you know, started doing a lot more, had a lot of guys on, put out drills and do full clinics and stuff like that. And was fortunate enough to meet you, Coach Lundy, through that. It's been really neat to be able to connect with so many good coaches who have made me a lot better as a coach, throughout this quarantine. The other thing that I did want to talk about is one thing that I've developed through that with Coach Jeff Reinbold, who has about a 40-year career, is currently the special teams coordinator with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, you know, has worked in just about every league and level in college football. We created a special team certification. So specifically geared towards high school and college coaches who wanted to see a holistic special teams model, talking about specialist technique, but also, you know, organization, analytics, schematics of every unit on special teams. And again, if you head over to the Twitter account, talk_teams, or go to teamstalkcert.com, you can learn more about that. But did want to plug that real quick. You know, pretty excited about that. We're close in the next week or two with being able to roll that out fully. So, trying to find ways to stay busy and get better during this. And that's kind of what we've done with the Twitter account there.
Yeah, I've checked out the site. It's quite an extensive curriculum. I also like how there's evaluations. There's ultimately a final exam. It's like a summative, if you will. It's excellent stuff. Anyone out there that's a special teams mind, not just strictly a specialist, please go check it out. It's fantastic. I will say, you know, that this has been a tough year, but I've been very fortunate that, like most, we've had to find alternative ways to network and just to occupy our time and stay productive. And I found you by chance on Twitter. I want to talk about Twitter a little bit with a college football coach like yourself. I don't think a lot of people are still aware that this is, in fact, probably the most efficient way to market yourself as an athlete coming out of high school, to communicate directly with a coach that might be of interest to you. Could you explain a little bit about what it is as far as the rules, the parameters of the NCAA, and why it's permissible to engage with an athlete?
Yeah, I mean, Twitter is invaluable as a college football coach. You know, not just here at Bates, but everywhere that I've been. It's been a really important part of the recruiting tool because we can reach out directly to student athletes that we want to recruit, and you as a student athlete can reach out directly to us. You know, we're fully able to do that through the direct messages. So that makes it so much simpler. And, you know, rather than you needing to find the coach's number, or go, you know, meet with them in person, same for us, rather than us having to find your number or something like that, we can go directly on Twitter to, you know, be able to find you instead of going through a coach or going through somebody else. It's far easier to directly connect with people. For us, it's being able to establish initial communication, but it's important for us from an information standpoint. You know, I go out there every time before I call a recruit, I scroll his Twitter just so I can see what new offers he has. If, you know, he set any PRs in the weight room, or he, you know, just hit the longest field goal of his career in practice or whatever else. You know, I always go through that, or before I bring a kid up in a staff meeting to offer or not. Like, it's so important just from the information standpoint, gathering standpoint for us, you know, in our recruiting process. And it's where we put out most of our recruiting content as well. So, and again, that's true of, you know, most of the college football programs I know of. So, you know, for you to be able to gain information, but also put information out there that you want the college coaches to have, you know, it's a really important deal.
Yeah, I mean, speaking from the specialist community exclusively, but I imagine it's like this in all realms, I think that kids don't value Twitter enough. I think it's a platform, like you mentioned, it's free. You're accessible. Every coach in the country is accessible. The onus is just on the athlete to put out the right product. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit. You mentioned a lot of the positives that people can and are currently doing, like posting like a big rep or posting some training film or last week's highlights. But could you also touch on a few things, maybe not the obvious, but a few things that also stand out to you as something that may be an alarm as far as their activity or what their feed looks like? Because you did say one of the first things you do when you want to inquire about an athlete is just check out their Twitter account. Could you also tell me a little bit about that? You don't have to give specifics, but I think it's important to give some general feedback to these kids that may in fact be doing certain things that could hurt their chances to appeal to you.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there are a lot of things that will make you pause. You know, certainly anything bigoted or racist, anything that has any type of violence, anything that, you know, is derogatory towards women, especially, you know, all those things that would be, you know, looked down upon in our program or, you know, in our college community at large are all things that will scare us away from you. You know, I think kind of maybe the things that you don't think about as much, though, you know, we don't love kids who are begging for offers, who are, you know, really putting themselves out there in a way that's obnoxious or anything like that. Like, be genuinely yourself, and also don't come off as desperate. You should highlight the best things about yourself. Make sure, again, if you set a PR on the bench, put that up there. If you hit a 60-yard field goal in practice, you know, put that up there. But I guess posting every single piece of mail that you get or something about every coach that DMs you or gives you a phone call. Like, that's not necessarily – that's just something that I'm like, I don't love to see necessarily. Will it ding us from recruiting you? Probably not, but it kind of gives me a bad taste in my mouth.
Oh, I like the authenticity. I think people appreciate that response because these are the kind of things that aren't discussed very often, you know. But the truth, you know, although it may hurt a little bit, it's definitely it can be used as a catalyst in the right direction for sure. That being said, you know, I really like your mindset as far as, you know, when I first met you, I could tell that there was a genuine interest in betterment of how do I make my kicker and punter and snapper better during this time as well. We've talked several times and that's what's led us to this, but I thought it was neat. And I think it's good to share your thoughts on the value of specialists and, you know, your coaching philosophy ultimately when you do in fact have them on campus.
Yeah. I mean, the value of specialists, especially the special teams coordinator, is tremendous. I mean, you know, those are the quarterbacks of the units that, you know, you're rolling out there, whether it's field goal, kickoff, or punt. So, you know, it can't be understated. I mean, if you want good special teams, you have good specialists and you have good returners, you know? So being able to get those guys is really, really important, you know, and I don't think that can be understated. In terms of my philosophy with coaching them, I really approach our specialists, you know, no different than I would approach coaching any other position. You know, in fact, I think, you know, your specialists need to be amongst, if not the most mentally tough guys, you know, in your program. And I tell, again, I coach the D-line as well as, you know, our special team. So I tell our D-line they have to be the physically toughest guys on the team, and our kickers, they have to be the most mentally tough guys on the team. And again, like, I think the analogy to quarterback really holds up when you talk about a mentality standpoint too, because just like the quarterback, when a kicker or punter is on the field, he's the only guy that's getting looked at, right? And somebody else might mess up, but if that guy misses the kick or the punter shanks it, it's all going to be on him. And honestly, similarly, if a kicker hits a kick, like, he's going to get all the praise, just like a quarterback would. He'll get more of the praise, even though the snap and the hold and the block are important, but he's going to have all eyes on him regardless, which is why there's such a premium on the mental toughness aspect for those guys, because they have to be able to deal with the lows as well as the highs of that position. And so, you know, I've really pushed them that way. I try to get in their head. You know, they ultimately always know that I'm there with them, but during practice reps, I'll be in their ear chirping a little bit. Like, I want them to feel uncomfortable. I want to make practice as uncomfortable as possible. So once a game comes and they feel that, it's not the first time they're feeling that pressure. Additionally, like, you know, I want to make them as much a part of, you know, whatever position group I'm coaching. Before it was running backs, now it's the D-line, you know, because I think it's important for them to be integrated as part of the team. I've been a part of a lot of situations where, you know, that wasn't really the case. The, you know, kickers and punters were just over there on their own and everybody else was kind of working. I didn't like that. Any chance I get to kind of combine the two meetings, or Indy or anything like that, I'll kind of give you an example. Like, during quarantine, I would meet via Zoom with our specialists and our defensive linemen. For example, the specialists would meet with me at 5, and then at 5:45, I would meet with the D lineman and the specialist at the same time. Even though there's not a whole lot of crossover between the technique and the rest of the stuff that we were talking about, like, I found I had a question of the day for them, which would be, you know, something silly like, if you could be one animal, what would you be? Or something a little more serious like, hey, what do you want to do with your career? But just to get to know all those guys. And so those guys got to know each other. And then after that, we would have our D-line meeting. Right now, when we're doing Indy, again, those groups are split for Indy. But in the middle of it, I do bag drills. I do core. I do glute work. All the stuff that both positions will need, but so they get the sense of being a team together, working together towards that common goal, and feeling integrated with everything that we're doing as a program. Because, you know, just like anything else, I think the more they feel a part of it, the more important it's going to be to them, and the harder they're going to work, and, you know, the better they're ultimately going to perform. So that stuff is all very important to me. And that's kind of my specialist philosophy.
I think it's interesting, as the level increases from high school to college, and then hopefully some of these guys get to play on Sundays. I find that, and I want your opinion, that the stress and the emphasis placed on this and the time spent and the consideration of, yes, these guys could win or lose a game for me, it's actually taken into consideration. I think at the high school level, there's often a disservice done to specialists that they feel undervalued, underappreciated. And it's evident in the utilization of these specialists. A lot of these guys don't get a lot of game reps aside from extra points and maybe some kickoffs. And of course, we have to punt in football, but you know, the field goal is often neglected because there's not enough time spent in practice on it. And I'm so grateful that there are guys like you in the college ranks and professional ranks that it's oftentimes one of the most stressed things that are going on, because although it may not be 80% of the practice, the 10 or 15 or 20% that is in fact spent on that third of the game, there's a lot of sets of eyes on it, and it's done purposefully, and it's done with film, and there's reflection after practice, maybe the next day on this, and there's a plan moving forward. So I'm really grateful for guys like you, and I think it's come a long way since I played 20 years ago with that mentality, that philosophy in special teams. I want to talk a little bit. You mentioned practice. A lot of these high school kids, I'm just going to share with you, and I'm sure you're well aware, in my opinion, and I think you'll agree, are overworked. And I think it's not anyone's fault but their own. I think that it's with good intention. I think that a lot of kickers and punters and snappers that only do those things feel that, well, if offense and defense has a 20-period practice that's scripted up, I need to find a way to stay busy during that same amount of time. And I don't dislike that thought. However, I do think that we can overwork ourselves during that 2 hours or 2 hours and 15 minutes on the field. I wanted to see if you could share how you monitor reps, perhaps, or how you can just shut it down for a kid if he seems like he's fatigued. Is there any of that in place? And could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough thing in terms of, I guess I'll answer the last part of yours first. Just, you know, knowing when to shut a guy down because of fatigue, I think a lot of it comes from having a level of trust with your specialist, and having a good relationship. And I mean, that's kind of part of the reason I went back to, like, you know, I talked about like the question of the day and stuff, like getting to know them. You know, I think the more that player trusts you as a coach, the more open that communication will be. And as a coach, you need to earn that trust, and you also need to ask the right questions. Because I think any like true athlete and competitor isn't going to be like, ah, coach, like, this is kind of hurting. I don't know. Can I shut it down? Like, you know, again, he has to trust you that he won't get ripped and benched right away by saying that. And I think as a coach, part of the art of it is knowing how to ask the right questions so you can find it out. And, you know, being willing to do that, even though he might be a little bit upset with it. You know, for myself, I mean, I'm in a constant state of evaluation for what I want to have our guys doing. I think that's another part of the communication piece, is seeing where our guys feel the most comfortable after they're doing, you know, what, and then also being able to find out from, you know, guys like yourself, you know, what the best plan of action is. But kind of like I mentioned before, we have a lot of things to get them activated early on in practice. You know, they'll do their kicks on air and their field goals and things like that leading into doing the team reps, just like any other position would have individual prior to going into a team rep. And then after that, it's a lot of core, it's a lot of glutes, it's a lot of catching. I have our punters in particular getting on the jugs and making sure that their hands are getting better. And, you know, obviously that's something that won't be stressing their legs either. And then a lot of stretching, big into yoga, and obviously flexibility being important with those guys. I sent them a bunch of videos for over quarantine, and they've really taken that. But especially, you know, being able to do that out in the practice field you know, whether it's 20 or 25 minutes, and just get that in and get their bodies right. And like you said, have them so they're as consistent as explosive athletes as they can be on a Saturday.
I love what you mentioned. I think there's several good points. I think that the kicks on air, which some people may not know, some kids call it dry reps, you know, taking the ball away, focusing on body mechanics. I like the stretching. I like the water breaks, you know, just taking that 5 minutes where you're maybe off your feet for a second. Hydration is important, especially down where I'm. I know you're in Maine, but it's still equally as important. You still lose water as you exercise. I think all of these things, and then the last thing you mentioned that I like too, as far as things I consider supplementary, is the jugs. And I know in high school we don't always have the opportunity to or have the access to a jugs machine, but we very well could use a partner and play catch and do bad ball scenario where it's like a knuckle ball, mm-hmm. or it's you got to adjust to go get to it, or you got to jump and go react to it. I think all of those things you mentioned are perfect ways to spread out a practice. I think what I'm seeing and hearing a lot from high school coaches and players is it's kicking. It's 20 to 30 kickoffs a day when you reflect on the day. It's probably 40 or 50 field goals at varying angles and distances. And oftentimes these distances, based on Twitter feedback, these kids are working out from 60 more than they work out from 42 or 37 right hash. And I think that's absurd. Something I'd like to I'd like to ask you right now, because it's almost, there's an overabundance of posts that I'm seeing from 60. And there's not much at all of a sample size of a kid that just has four or five unedited reps between 37 and 45. Could you talk about why that may be a problem?
And I think, and even before that, just one point that I wanted to make that kind of hopped in my brain as you were saying that is, I think that's why it's so important. You know, whether your coach is doing it for your specialist or you're the specialist kind of creating, you know, your practice plan, is to do just that, have a practice plan, put it in writing. Because it's super easy to lose track of it, right? You might set out like, you know, I'll just hit a few kickoffs, and you end up with 30, and you look back like, oh, I did too much there. Or like you said, you end up going back to 60 and hitting a ton because you don't have the prescribed reps of, okay, I'm hitting five extra points and I'm hitting one off the hash, you know, going back from the 25 or however you want to structure it up. I think it's important to, again, have that organization plan it out, all that stuff. But in terms of the evaluation portion, you know, I think you're right. Like in the 60, you know, yard field goal, that'll catch your eye as a coach. But, you know, truth be told, you know, the consistency is so much more important in that for my evaluation and talking to other guys for their evaluations as well. And having, like you said, the camera shot with it, just continuously kicking, maybe you fast forward it in between the kicks so we can see what your true consistency is. Because for me, like you said, that long field goal will catch my eye, but you know, I ain't trusting that you can do that consistently unless I see it. It's the same thing. Like highlight videos are all right, you know, from the games, and they're always something that I want to see. But I think kind of the missing piece right now from an evaluation standpoint, for especially your 2020 kicker spawners, is not having the live in-person camps. You know, it's always invaluable for me to see guys live because you see that level of consistency. Failing that, like you said, coach, take a video where you press play and then, you know, you hit 10 straight field goals and start at the 25 or start with a 25 yard field goal and then work it back and maybe fast forward in between reps, but you know, show us that you're going 10 in a row with that or 9 out of 10, and show us that you can consistently have the right footwork and come through with great form, you know, and all the rest of the things that we're looking for. Because you know what I value more than anything else is that consistency piece. And you know, in terms of the evaluation portion, you know, we're fortunate we aren't really looking for a kicker for this year for 2020, but you know, we would be in a difficult spot right now because I want to be able to see that consistency, which is hard to see off video. So, you know, make it as easy as possible for the guys who are evaluating you by doing that, you know, constant filming. Yeah.
That's great feedback. I think this needs to be heard because these kids, you know, I like what you said. It's an attention grabber, most certainly is. However, if a kid's timeline is full of, I would say his last five posts were all 55 plus, but there was one rep taken, I think you as a coach, your first thought is, how many reps did he take before he felt that one was good enough to in fact post?
Exactly.
The eye in the sky doesn't lie, but it very well could when you edit out everything else that was done poorly. You know, so I wanted to move on to, we talked the other day about being creative with limited resources. And what part of our discussion was space and practice. I know a lot of high schools and some smaller colleges, you know, their expectation is that everyone is operating on one field in an assigned area. And then during team periods, you know, a half the field is used for two big units. But the reality is this, in that scenario, it's almost never conducive for a specialist to have the space to punt, to kick off, or even have some field goals going on, even short ones. So I wanted to talk about maybe utilizing some low stress, non-contact drills like the no step and one steps. Maybe have you talk about, you know, is there a softball outfield we can get some space just to do, you know, some small area focused drill work. And the last thing I wanted to touch on before turn it over to you is, I think that the utilization of cell phones, you know, can be very purposeful because oftentimes we've got one or two guys with cameras out in the field at practice, if that, and it's really helpful for specialists to see what they're doing at all times, especially if there's that one rep that they just felt completely comfortable with. I want them to see that rep and try to recreate that rep. And the only way they're going to do that is through seeing it, reviewing it, and just really breaking it down from beginning to end. Could you expound on maybe being creative? You know, you're at a smaller school, and I think you've had to be competitive. Could you just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think first and foremost, it comes with being organized and understanding what's going on during that point of practice and what type of field space you have. So for us on our practice plans, we have as part of it exactly where every team drill is going to be, and you know, if we're moving the ball up and down the field and anything else. So I craft the plan for our specialists right on the same page. So, you know, if everybody else is going to be using the whole rest of the field, that's when our specialists will be getting their core work in. That's when they'll be doing their stretching. Maybe they'll be on the side of the field with the jugs. When we know that we'll have half the field, that's when we're getting our punts. That's when we're getting our kicks. That's when we're getting our kickoffs and stuff like that. And there's definitely, you know, our specialists got to keep their head on a swivel because every once in a while a drill changes location and they got to pick the balls up and be ready to move. But, you know, having that level of organization of actually, first of all, you know, knowing where all of your offensive and defensive drills are going to be and then putting your specialists in around them, you know, I think it is really invaluable for that. You know, worst comes to worst, we're fortunate we have a pretty big grass field right next to our field where those guys can go and get in work. But you're right, at Buffalo State, actually, it's funny you brought up the softball field. You know, there's a softball field right next to it. You know, our guys would sometimes get out there and use that. But the most part, you know, we're always able to be creative and find extra space if we need to. But I think you'll find that as you organize your practice plans, there'll generally be enough time for you to get the full field work in as long as you can structure it in terms of where your people are. And in terms of the filming portion, you know, we only have, you know, the one guy in the press box on the sideline, the one in the end zone. So what I've done is basically once we get somebody injured, then they're our indie film guy. And we'll use phones. Actually, iPads are the best if you have access to an iPad. But again, like everybody will be spaced out during the indie period for offense and defense. So we'll have that guy film, you know, in this case now our defensive line's indie during that time. And then once we flip it over, they'll essentially go over and they'll be the indie filmer for the specialists. So we're able to get all those reps. That stuff, even though I can't be coaching those guys in the moment, that we'll end up watching the next day. And then that also lets me know how many reps they're getting versus what was prescribed on the practice plan too. I can make sure that they aren't under kicking, they aren't over kicking. You know, that's my actual way to be able to quality control those guys as well, to make sure they're getting the amount of work in. And then when I watch it, that's when we have the opportunity to communicate, hey, did you feel like you got enough work today? Did you feel like it was too much? How can we adjust things going forward to make sure you're in a space to be as successful as possible? So, you know, that's the way that we work at our place anyway. And it seemed to have worked pretty well for us so far.
You know, it sounds like you guys are doing a great job. I'm really close to the Florida Gators practice facilities, you know, hour and a half. And I go over there probably twice a year just to see how things are done well. I mean, you know, that they're an SEC program, and it sounds like that you guys are filming the same amount that they are as far as where the attention is, in fact, on the specialist. And I think that the one thing that we could all probably supplement that with is the specialist. I know there's got to be a level of trust there, but I think in college there is, that the cell phone use would be entirely on the filming of individual periods. You know, when there's no one looking at us, you know, maybe the punter can film me on kickoff, then I can film his punts while he's teamed up with the long snapper. And then we can give the long snapper some undivided attention, one of us, while the other one's stretching or getting water. So, you know, it's gotta be creative. I think the creative wins in anything and everything, right?
Ideally, I think though, just not to cut you off there, is you use an injury guy for two reasons. If you don't have a team manager or anything like that, first of all, I think it goes back to the point of making sure these guys are integrated and feeling like football players. Like, I don't think you'd have any other football player wearing pads on during a practice filming. Like, I would never ask a defensive lineman who's practicing to film Indy and then get in and get a drill. Sometimes, you know, it's what you have to do, but I try to avoid that. And the other case is, you know, if you have a guy who's injured, just being able to keep them integrated as part of the team. And this is kind of going off the specialist part, but you know, I always try to find little jobs for those guys, because I think, you know, they slip into a bad place sometimes if they can't feel like they're helping the team win games and are contributing. So, you know, being able to find little jobs like that for your guys who are hurt gives them a role and at least helps them feel a part of it while they're not doing certainly what they would want to do. You know, if it's a, you know, there's some guys who are lazy and would just rather, you know, grab ass on the side. But I think you'll find, for the most part, you know, 90% of your guys, especially the guys that you want on your team, you know, will be happy and will be appreciative of having the opportunity to do something like that. They'll help your team. So I'm always in favor of finding somebody who's hurt who can help you out that way.
I can relate to that. You know, I had a really bad injury that was recurring on my adductor, put me out for a year and a half at Miami, and they found little places to put me in, you know, whether it was like an onside or just surprise, like little like pooch kicks and stuff that were, you know, I was limited in how hard I could hit the ball. But on my recovery, I was able to give looks. I can give one example is we played Washington and the kid took a really indirect path to the ball, and he either left his hips open or closed them out really quickly at the point of contact. And I practiced that because he didn't hit it far. He hit it really high and short. And that was part of my recovery with the approval of the training staff. But I felt involved because I was in a dark place. I knew I wasn't going to get in the field and I didn't feel like I was contributing. And I think that was a big help. So I'm glad you said that. And I hope someone hears that and says, you know, I do have a guy right now on the sidelines that could probably be a wonderful assistant in some way. I wanted to transition to a fourth down mentality. I want to briefly share that I got to be on Nick Saban's staff for his first year at Tuscaloosa for kicking camp. He was trying to find a punter. We brought in a bunch of guys to be evaluated on both sides, but he really was looking for a punter. And one thing he said to my specialist that day before we got started, I will never forget, and I use it often, is he said, I treat my kickers, punters, and snappers like assassins because they all get one shot. And I know that you can agree with that because I've heard you speak on this very subject, and it may be different words, but could you explain, I'm going to give you a scenario. We're in a game. Offense is driving. We are in need of a field goal to win this game. We're getting close, but we're near midfield, you know, it's first down. Do you go through these hypotheticals with your kicker and say, hey, when is the last time you should probably go kick into the net? Where should you be on third down, ready for our call on fourth? Could you explain that a little bit? Like what fourth down mentality means to you and how it's relatable to that scenario?
Yeah, fourth down mentality for me, and it's in particular to communicate to, you know, those other guys other than our specialists, right? Because they live for the fourth down. But the fourth down mentality for those guys is, all right, if you're on offense or you're on defense, how are you going to approach that fourth down? It's a really critical play, right? So your offense goes out, you're a wide receiver, you're making sure your gloves are extra tight, you get in a great stance, you have great attention to detail, you're going to break that route off at the perfect point there, right? And you're going to have a lot of energy and you're going to celebrate if you make a big play and get a first down, as you rightfully should. Fourth down mentality that way is applying it to every fourth down or every kicking play. Because obviously, typically, as your name would suggest, they typically take place on fourth downs. And really three things go into that. I'm a big power of three guy. So, you know, believing that people memorize things and remember things in threes better. So it's maniacal effort, detail, energy. And that's what we want to play with when we are in the kicking game. You know, I think that stuff all kind of speaks for itself. We go pretty far with it. You know, when we go into the field, the official signal for fourth down is a raised fist, right? So when we go out into the field as a special teams unit, whether it's punt return or kickoff or whatever, we have a fist raised up. And then when I say, okay, what's our fourth down mentality? I raise my fist, pick a finger off, and they say maniacal effort, two, detail, three, energy. So, you know, that was just my way of communicating how critical our jobs are as special teams player. Again, whether you're a specialist or you're a gunner or you're trying to block a punt or you're, you know, our bullet on kickoff, you know, whatever you do, you know, your job is super, super important to us being able to be successful and end up with more points than the opposing team, which is what we're trying to do ultimately. In terms of running through those scenarios with our specialists, I'll be very honest with you. That's something that I haven't done before. It's something that I've heard a lot this offseason, and I'm going to start doing with our guys so they have more of an opportunity to visualize and be successful with it. But, you know, to be honest with you, like, that's been a big part of my offseason. You know, as I sat back, you know, and tried to evaluate myself after the season, I honestly didn't know enough about specialists. So it's been a big part to be able to learn a lot more about different ways to be able to communicate with those guys and different ways to be able to, you know, help them be successful. And I think that's a big part of it, the visualization part. But to be honest with you, that's not something that I've done before, but looking forward to jumping into more stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't expect you or any coach in the country to, because I was a kicker and I didn't have a particular routine. I was constantly kicking in the net, you know, what I did to make me feel like I was staying warm or whatever it was. But I think it's very important to control what you can control and to have process, you know. And I learned this over the years, and most yes. probably like most recently was the last few, I've really stressed this, that these kids, and you've seen enough Twitter and all this we've mentioned, these kids can make the kick. But I think we started the show out by saying that there's such a mental part to this, that there's a lot of subconscious thinking that occurs, especially in a stressful situation. And the result is you're not as good in crunch time sometimes. And I think it's because we're not aware of the subconscious enough. And what I mean by that is, you know, are you breathing? Are you cutting your air off when you're out there? Are you entering the field from the same place every time? Like I mentioned earlier, are you getting the last few kicks in the net at the same point in the drive each time? There should be some consistency there, because if there's not, there's uncertainty, you know? So I'd love to talk, and I'm sure we will, about these things later, but I there's just so much there that to still be discovered and mastered and perfected, if you will. And I think that's why I like to do what I do, is I learn from you and I try and give you what I know. And I think it's very complimentary. I just want to thank you so much for your time today. Mm-hmm. If you could just please remind the audience a couple ways that they could get a hold of you. I know you mentioned early in the show, but just one more time for the audience.
So my personal Twitter handle is @_CoachG_. So that's one more time, @_CoachG_. And then my special teams one is Teams Talk, which is @talk_teams.
Thank you so much for everyone tuning in today. That was our third episode of the Fourth Down Focus podcast. I really want to thank Coach McLaughlin for sharing his knowledge today. Hope you guys have a wonderful week, and I'll see you real soon.